Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. A lot of texts pouring in, a lot of calls coming in as well. We'll get right back to those in a second. One other Trump story from this week that gets buried in everything else. So as we mentioned, the president met with the prime minister of Norway and they had their little press conference together because we have a defense deal with Norway. We've sold them $10 billion of F-35s. Which is a very controversial program, very expensive, $400 billion program.
Yeah.
The president said that we have started delivery. He said, quote, in November, we started delivering, or he said, in November, we started delivering the first F-52s and F-35 fighter jets. I'm working on that. I don't know if I'll get there, but I think I did. Hey, come on. Come on.
It was all right. It was okay. It was all right.
You are tough tonight, buddy.
You're no Donald Trump.
I want to be treated like this. I got a wife at home, mister.
Yeah. I get better treatment. What? Go ahead. Wait a minute. You said that we sold them F-35s. Where did the F-52s come from?
In November, we started delivering the first F-52s and F-35 fighter jets. We have a total of 52, and they've delivered a number of them already, a little ahead of schedule. So we don't have an F-52. There is no such thing. There is in the video game Call of Duty, which I've never... Now, we hear that the president watches a lot of TV,
right?
Watches a lot of Fox News,
right?
Has three televisions supposedly in his residence.
Oh, okay.
So he can watch a lot at once. A
lot of TV.
Flip around.
Yeah.
But I've never heard that he plays video games or is a gamer. So I don't think that's where he got it from.
I don't think either.
The thinking, according to CNN, was that... It was written that, you know, we started delivering the total of 52, that maybe just misread it. Said
I think
52.
It just kind of juxtaposed a few numbers and letters.
That happens to all of us.
Yes.
So let's not make a big deal about it.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny.
Well,
it is kind of funny. When a president says, you know, we were selling something that we're not doing, then people go, well... What's up with that? Well, he probably just misread it. The 52 number was at least in there. We're selling him 52 of these things.
Yeah.
For $10 billion.
Billions and billions of stars in the galaxy.
Okay, 312-981-7200. I believe it's Coco who's on the line right now. Coco, is that you? Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I mean, what a great debate. I'm enjoying the way you guys have positioned the debate of what happened with Trump. I am an immigrant.
Okay.
Originally from Zimbabwe, been living in the Chicago area for 17 years. So have a bit of wanted to throw in my two cents.
Sure.
And I certainly think that the way what Trump said was jarring at first, but as I digested it, a couple of audiences that, would certainly react differently to this. As an African, I think, folks come here for, different reasons. America has always been that beacon of opportunity. I came here, personal story, I came here in the early 2000s. At that time, the U.S. economy was doing great. The U.S. companies were hiring skilled labor from all over the world. I benefited from that. I came here as a skilled worker. I worked for a Fortune 500 company in Northbrook. That's my personal story. But I think for, folks that do live in, you guys were saying developing countries, third world country, there are challenges there. However, I think what the leaders in those countries should take from this, in my personal view and opinion, it should be a challenge. Some of these countries, need to institute in a democratic systems, need to strengthen the institutions. You won't believe this, but back home, we do have running water. We have some of the amenities of the first world countries where I came from. My neighbor was from Colorado, an American missionary out there doing great work. So the U.S. does great work around the world. So when people hear what President Donald Trump says from the Oval Office, it's a little jarring because the U.S. does do great work, through organizations like USAID and things like that. So, a little jarring, but I think it's also a core challenge to the leaders of some of these countries to rise up and begin to do things that lift up the lives of their citizens. I really do believe that.
And I understand where you're coming from that on that, Coco. I don't believe that any of these at least, I don't know the leaders of those countries, but I would assume they're not sitting there going, oh, he's right. We really should do better. I mean, they know what their countries are like, right? Now, whether there's corrupt governments and you know, we have those issues here in the state of Illinois as well as everywhere else, right? So I don't know those countries enough to say, boy, that really should shake them up and hopefully they'll step up and do better. I find it hard to believe that suddenly him derogatorily referring to their country is going to make them want to do better more than they did the day before. I mean, if, you know, the country's suffering, you would hope that whoever the leadership is working to rectify that and bring the country greater infrastructure and all the things that they need. And I know that's a very complicated issue, but you'd like to hope that that's already happening. And whether President Donald Trump is going to be the one that, you know, I just don't see 20 years from now some leader saying, well, you know, we really turned it around after Donald Trump woke us up to what a poop hole our country was. That would be surprising. Coco, let me ask you a couple quick questions. So you came here to work for a Fortune 500 company, the 2000s. They were hiring and bringing a lot of skilled labor. You've stayed in the country. So did you come through on one of those skilled worker visa programs?
Absolutely. I came through H-1B visa program, yes.
Okay. Now, I remember a lot being written or during the election, I was speaking to a guy from, I think the group is called Numbers USA, and it was an immigration reform company. And they were talking about how the conversation, they didn't want to just be about the wall. They wanted to be about all sorts of issues, including those visas, because they said certain companies really have interesting control. They bring people in on those visas, and there's some really interesting restrictions with those visas. Like, you have to work for the company that brought you in for a certain amount of time, or else you get kicked out of the country. How did it work out for you, and how have you been able to stay, and are you on a path to citizenship?
Well, that's you're absolutely correct. I'm impressed by your knowledge. So those visas are very restrictive. 3-year work visa, H-1B skilled visa at the time, and I'm sure things have changed. And you could not work for you couldn't transfer and work for another employer. Now, you know, unbeknownst to me, and this is the pre Google age, you know, so there was very little information out there. So you just went with the best information available to you. The visas were restrictive, but, you know, it did offer an opportunity, a pathway to, you know, green card, depending, you know, so there were 3-year visas renewable after a 3-year period. If the company liked what you were doing, they could renew that for another 3 years. So total time on those visas at the time was 6 years. So you could renew it twice. And after that, you'd get an opportunity to apply for a green card, and that's the path that I took.
And for the company that you worked for at the time, and I don't want you to name them, but I've heard these stories about these companies have these people, and you've got to play ball with that company, whether you're unhappy about the salary, the work hours, things like that. If you want to stay here, you've got to keep that company happy with you. Was that a tough situation for workers like you that were brought in by the company you worked for?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely correct. So, you know, I was a 30-year-old. I was young. I was adventurous. Always wanted to come out to the U.S. Listen, you know, my generation, I'm in my mid to late 40s now. We grew up watching Dallas. So that's the America that we knew, right? So, you know, the U.S. was exporting a lot of things. I'll tell you this. Dallas was appointment television where I came from.
Oh, that's funny. It was here too. Yeah. It was here too at the time. Did you get hung up in the whole who shot JR thing?
Absolutely. This is big. J.R. Ewing, you know, Southbrook Ranch, Bobby Ewing, you know, this is what we grew up watching. So we wanted to see for ourselves. I wanted to see for myself, you know.
Yeah.
But bottom line, yes, the visas were restrictive, you know, but, you know, I still believe that, you know, when I got the job, you know, I put my resume out on Monster during, you know, those days. Monster was the job site, right?
Okay.
And I got interviews. You know, I came here legally. I came here on a visitor's visa. But, you know, I said, you know what? I was here for 6 months. When my time was up, I left. But, you know, I had an opportunity to interview, got a job. You know, they respected my qualifications. That was great. You know, so I feel that the U.S. is still that place of opportunity. You know, going through a tough time right now, you know, but the U.S. is still a place of great good.
And Coco, have you been able to become a citizen?
Not yet, no. That's a work in progress.
How long does it generally take? How long will it take you?
It's been a complicated process, but I think nearing the end of it. It's taken a lot longer than I would have liked, but I've been able to make it work. It hasn't been easy. It's not the easiest of things to do.
Can I ask a question? This is Roger Battishop in the newsroom. Is the reason why the process is taking so long because that is the process here in America, that there is a lot of what we might call vetting as far as the immigration laws for America? Or is it just that that's your situation, that's your because of the job situation or something else?
I think that's my unique situation. In terms of the process, it's pretty straightforward, the way I see it. You play by the rules. The way I came here in my personal situation, by now things should have moved a whole lot faster. But I'm sure there's bureaucracy as well in the process. But the way I understood, my employer was, I thought I had a great relationship with my employer. They were more than willing to help in every respect along the way. So. Unfortunately, that company is no longer, but, that's a different thing. But, that's to answer your question, yes, it's a situation that's unique to me.
Coco, since you're not officially a citizen yet, is there a concern that you have that with the way things are going about deportations and threats like that, that you might get sent out of the country? Or have you been here long enough? Is your visa secure enough that you are on a path and you shouldn't have any problem completing it?
I'm on a path, but, nothing is guaranteed these days, with the climate that we're in. So, it's a watch and see and hope for the best.
We really appreciate your time and your insights, Coco. Thanks for calling in. Keep listening and please call again.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. 312-981-7200. Fascinating things we learn here in the middle of the night. Quick break and more of your calls next, 720 WGN. Matt Bubala Show, 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. Callers on hold. Please keep holding. Here is Steve on 720 WGN. Good morning, Steve. Hello, Steve. Steve, I will put you back on hold and maybe you'll jump back on. Just see if Steve is still there and we will still talk to him if we can. 773 text, Roger, the waiting period varies by country. Some get approval in 2 years, but Mexico can run from 6 to 10 years. I'm guessing that hasn't sped up at all in the last year for them.
I would imagine that there have been, other than the executive order, barring immigrants from certain countries.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anything has changed on the immigration laws in America yet, but that is what is being debated in Congress right now. It is part of the overall, the DACA, the wall, the immigration laws, everything is being discussed.
Well, that's what this was about, right? There was a bipartisan, three on each side. And I heard some other senators say, why are they representing all of us? I would assume that they kind of had the backing of people or felt they could sell it to the whole body if they were bringing it to the president. You would like to think that they knew what they were doing. And so that was, Democrats were giving up something, right? And the Republicans were giving up something.
Sure.
But President Trump didn't seem to like what they were bringing to the table. I think Steve is back now. Steve, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. How are y'all doing?
We're good. How are you?
Doing good. So all I could think about today, listening to the comments and the commentary from different organizations, from CNN to Fox News or whatever, and just trying to stay informed. It seemed like everyone's talking about Trump, but I think we all know who Trump is at this point.
Mm-hmm.
No one seems to talk about the base and who is this base. And it seems like this base of 30 to 35% that keeps supporting Trump no matter what he does, no matter what he says. And that really worries me because that seems to say that 30 to 35% of our country agree with him and think like him. And that means that 30 to 35% of those people are in charge of potentially working at companies in charge of determining who gets raises or who doesn't, who gets promoted and who doesn't. And that's really a scary thought for me. And so it just seems like that topic isn't really being discussed by anybody. I mean, I get the issues that we have with our president. I don't like it, but he got elected. And now I see he's saying some crazy things, and yet nothing's happening. There's, you know, people seem to be just going along with it for political reasons or other reasons. I don't get it.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, do you feel like people are going along with it? We're talking a lot about it, and I know talking and doing something about it are two different things, but what would you like them to do? Do you think this is to the level of a president should be removed by saying things like this? It's not illegal. It's disconcerting. It's disheartening. It's maybe abhorrent, but it's not an offense that merits impeachment. And Steve, the other thing I would say is that he got elected, right? So there is something about why did people, despite knowing about the Billy Bush tapes and other accusations and things, elect him? Well, we reelected Bill Clinton, right? Or was it in his second term that he almost got impeached? Either way, he left office and he would have been reelected again. So we, for whatever reasons, forgive a lot of things from people or ignore them or don't believe them or whatever it is. But the people that I know that supported President Trump, that are business leaders and things like that, it was about a big thing in the business community from people I know is all about the regulations. There's too many regulations. They slow down business. They slow down all these things. We need somebody in there who's going to peel back regulations. I think that I'd like to think that 80% of the people that voted for Trump are really unhappy with how he conducts himself, but it's the Republican policies that they wanted to see that they voted for. Just like there's a lot of people who will vote for anybody who is going to be anti-abortion. It is a big one-issue vote for a lot of people, and that's the way they're going to vote. And that is what it is. And you know, I might not understand why they're like that, but that is how some people vote. So I like to think that most people are very unhappy with how he is acting, but they believed in what he's there for or what the Republicans want to get accomplished, and so they back him.
But I think what you said is true up until the point that he showed his true colors. He got elected, and everyone was like, he'll be more presidential, he'll be this, he'll be that. And that hasn't happened. And everything that he's done since, there's just this complicity to it. You know what I mean? He makes a comment, and the Republicans can't say anything for, 16 to 24 hours, whatever it was. Fox News, I switched over. I like to be well-informed on all sides. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to talk about it. They didn't mention it. They're talking about other things. And then finally, they make a couple of statements on it. And then even when they did start to talk about it, it became the what about? Well, what about the Clinton thing?
Sure.
What about
sure.
this? And you know what I mean? And so at some point, it becomes a little ridiculous to give up that moral authority. And I mean, it just, I think it's kind of an indictment on our country and our culture to some extent that it's okay. And that's unfortunate because that means that I have to assume that there's a certain percentage of people out there that are racist. There are a certain percentage of people that are making decisions that aren't in the best interest of the population, which is really unfortunate. I don't want to think that way, but that's the way I feel.
Well, I think, Steve, that the truth is there are a certain percentage of people who are racist. I still encounter people all the time that say racist things that surprise me and or bum me out that this still exists as much as it does in this world. And it does. You know, we're not in the post-racial, you know, we elected a black president era. If anything, maybe people that felt unhappy about those last 8 years found a voice in Donald Trump and came out, and he has not shied away from embracing the support of people that feel that way, that feel that America used to be one thing and now it's different and we want to go back to that way. He has told them it's okay to have those feelings and not have to be so quiet about it. I think that we are not nearly as far along as we thought we were, and that's kind of come out and become known. And I think that our America changes with each generation, that it's going to get more and more diverse, and it gets more and more open, because I think most of the huge, heavy support on this comes from an older base that knew a different world back in the day and are scared by the changes they've seen. And that only time will help truly change that. And I hope it will keep changing that.
I agree with everything you've said. I was hoping that percentage was like 5%. I'm unfortunately, I'm starting to think that percentage is a lot higher, which is unfortunate.
708 text, I'm sure there are more than 35% that support Trump. I don't believe everything I read or hear, but I know he got elected. He has more supporters than 35%. Certainly more than 35% of the people voted for him. About 49.5% of the people voted for him, but people voted for him in the areas that needed to vote for him to get him the election. But whether they still support him or not might be a different conversation. There's probably a certain percentage of people who voted for him that now regret the vote, and a certain people that voted for him and now just regret how he's acted, but still maybe would have voted for him, because the fact is there were people within my own family, to my chagrin, who said, yeah, but Hillary's a criminal. She should be in jail. And I think there is no true evidence of any of that. She's been, the God, that family's been looked at up and down. Maybe she is a criminal. Maybe she should be in jail. But for God's sakes, people, that's been looked at over and over and over and over again. I don't think anything we're talking about, Benghazi or emails or anything else, has come to anything. And they've had forever to look at it. I think that's ridiculous. But there is a percentage of America who feels that that is the real issue. Hillary was evil and we had to keep her out of there no matter what. And so that's what, you know, that's the way certain percentage of people voted. Certain percentage of people love Trump and who he is and what he stands for. Certain percentage of people love the Republican ideals and they want a Republican in office. It all came together in the right way, and Hillary didn't run the greatest campaign and blew it.
That's what I was going to just say. The
and I really do wonder now, would Bernie have gotten elected? I don't know.
The Republicans owned the narrative.
The Republicans are so good at saying and convincing of what they want it to be, right?
Yeah, very
whether
convincing.
It's true or not, keep saying it, keep pushing it, mm-hmm. and then that's what it will be.
And other factors that entered into it, you mentioned a couple of them. He got the votes where he needed the votes,
yeah,
in order to swing the Electoral College. But again, we're dealing with... you got to deal with the fact that less than half of eligible voters went and voted. It was an extremely divisive election. And for whatever reasons, half of the country that was eligible to vote did not vote.
Yeah, but was that any different than the last three elections?
More people came out for Barack Obama's two elections. More people came out.
More votes.
For those two elections.
Yeah.
That was a bump. And it was higher than the elections before that.
I want to say, Roger, going into the election, that suppression of the vote or lack of interest in voting should have played into Hillary's hands, because the thought would have been Republicans who can't stomach Trump but won't vote for Hillary just won't vote.
I understand. And
it
again, didn't work out that way. You mention it. There is great study by many political pundits that the Hillary Clinton campaign did not run the campaign they had to run in order to win the Electoral College.
And
that while they ran the campaign they wanted to run and won the popular vote, they did not do what they needed to do in order to win the presidency.
They had to win.
And not only that, but there were other issues. We're talking voter suppression laws throughout the country. There was a report I read where 400,000 people, adults in one state who were eligible to vote, could not vote because of voter suppression rules.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people. So, you know, there's a lot that needs to be addressed. I don't see it getting addressed satisfactory for both parties or even three parties anytime soon. It has gone from being a fair democracy to a highly divisive political structure?
Well, it's been a highly divisive political structure in the past. It is worse, I would say, than it's probably ever been, because we've never had candidates as divisive as President Trump was. I've never in my life heard candidates attack other candidates. There's always been attack ads. There's always been mudslinging.
Oh, look at the Goldwater ads.
But we
talk about attacks. My goodness.
Was it anything like what
we're talking
about?
Saying that the other party would lead the country into a nuclear holocaust.
Okay, that's not an attack ad. No way. That is a. Listen, okay, it's an attack ad. They're going to lead us into war. They're going to lead us into nuclear war annihilation. That is not the same as just derogatory, mudslinging, little Marco Rubio, crooked Hillary Clinton, she should be in jail. Those were personal attacks. There was no Goldwater's idiotic Hitler-like thing that's going to... It was their policies are going to lead us to nuclear war. There was nothing about the policies in this election. This was all just personal, vile attacks. It was crazy.
There has been mudslinging in presidential elections for decades and decades and decades. We've just never seen it.
More than that, I mean, if you go back to Jefferson and those guys, the letters that were written to... I mean, you go to one of the Thomas Jefferson shows that John Williams does, you'll hear stories you won't believe about what they used to do to each other. But it's still,
we've never seen it like this.
We have never seen it like this in an age like this where it all gets disseminated so quickly and spread. President Trump changed how it works.
Exactly.
Will it continue to work that way, or will we go back to more normalcy? That'll be a very interesting question a couple of years from now. Okay, Roger, we're really late
for
the news. Are you ready to do
because
that,
I did that. I'm ready.
That's okay. All right, let's get the headlines now. 312-981-7200. We have a couple of callers who've been holding on for quite a while, so let's try to get them on. Patrick, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Matt. Good morning, Roger. How are you guys doing?
We're good. What did you want to say?
I got to try to get my thoughts in line here. First, I got to rein in my emotions on this because, as you know, this is our president, period. Yes. You're the president of the United States. You have a responsibility not to go out there and speak your mind like you're in a locker room or like you're sitting at the corner bar. You represent more than just white people in America. You represent the entire United States, black, white, male, female, young, old. Mm-hmm. This man has done nothing short but make our country a laughingstock. He's made incendiary comments one after another, after another, after another, tweet after tweet after tweet. And I understand sometimes, yes, you have to be incendiary to get things done. But being incendiary just to feed your ego and your narcissism, it's moving us backwards. He really is. He is moving us backwards as a people. And it saddens me. It brings me to tears. And it's just, it's wrong. As a black man in America, I already have to deal with people who fear me based on my skin color. I've dealt with it my whole life. I'm not the only one who's ever dealt with it.
No,
but I can't
not
be
at all. I'm sure,
by that.
Patrick.
You know, I can't. And
let me say, and let me apologize to you. It's such a.
Why would you need to apologize?
I'm going
to
tell. I want
to cut you off.
I apologize. I'm going to, because here's the thing that I grew up in a white town in Munster, Indiana, where my diversity were Filipino students, and then I went to Mount Carmel High School on the south side, right by the Museum of Science and Industry, where it was maybe half white, and then I think like probably 30% African-American and another 20% Hispanic. So that's the time in my life I really got diversity. And you said, well, I have people scared of me all the time. And I'll tell you, it is just a reflex still for me when I'm at a parking garage late at night or walking downtown late at night. I don't think twice when I walk by white people, but I do when I walk by black people. And I hate that that's how it is. And I don't know why that is, but that is how it is. And it's...
And again, when I say don't apologize, I'm not blaming you.
I understand.
You know what I mean? And again, I don't want to live in a world of blame. I got to move forward. I got to teach my kids to move forward. My children are biracial. And I'm not going to point out who they're biracial.
Sure.
And they're the ones who are going to inherit this world that we're creating. And another point I was trying to make, you know, first of all, I forgot your producer's name, but she's
Jess.
Amazing. I was telling her how, I don't know how you guys do this. I take my hat off to you for dealing with these stories on such a regular basis without wanting to pull your hair out or go jump out of a window. Because it's just, you have to talk about it over and over and over. And I know you want to get on with other things, but these things have to be addressed. They have to be dealt with, you know. And I didn't vote for Trump. I didn't like him. Didn't like the way he ran his campaign. Mm-hmm. I think Hillary Clinton took him for granted, which is another reason. This is my opinion. It's not a fact. I'm not some political guy.
Sure.
I just know I vote when it's time to vote. I did not vote for Trump. And I think all the people that went out and rioted, many of them didn't vote, and they should all be ashamed of themselves. If you did not vote, you should be ashamed of yourself. But what gets me the most is not so much him saying these things as it is the people who are out there going, yeah, he's saying how it is. They're patting him on the back. For God's sakes, David Duke whispers in this man's ear.
Yeah.
Okay, and if you say David Duke to some people, they're going to go, well, Barack Obama had Jeremiah Wright. Maybe so, but Barack Obama distanced himself from Jeremiah Wright, if I'm not mistaken. But that's another point. Now we're going to go into tit for tat.
Yeah.
We don't have a presidency here. We don't have a country being run. It's tit for tat. Well, the Clintons did this. The Bushes did this. It's not the Clintons' administration anymore. Barack Obama is no longer in office. He had his two terms. He's done. It's Trump's term. He has the opportunity to rise above all the... I got to watch my mouth. I almost said a word that shouldn't be said. All the nonsense. He has his opportunity, and he's wasted it because his ego won't let him. You know, the white nationalist thing, that's another thing. When you mention white nationalism to some of his supporters, not all. I'm not going to sit here and say all of his supporters are like this.
Sure.
Okay? We can't do that. We can't generalize like that. But I have talked to a vast majority. You mentioned white nationalism. They go, well, Black Lives Matter is about black supremacy. Really? You see what I'm getting? It's
tit-for-tat
attitude that's really just digging us deeper and deeper and deeper. Pretty soon, I fear, and I'm living in like my own little Twilight Zone episode, we're going to go back to colored only, white only.
Well, Pat,
that's a sad thing.
I don't think that, you know, you mentioned that you have biracial kids and they're going to inherit this world. And Patrick, what I'm going to say is they're going to change this world, because I think we had 8 years of President Obama, and all of us who are more progressive thought, man, look at these strides we're making. And what we're realizing is there was a seething underground of resentment towards 8 years of Barack Obama, and what's going to be a bigger news story, I'm telling you, in the next year or two, is going to be the backlash and the further backlash against the LGBTQ community for all the progress they were able to make under President Obama as those things slowly get stripped away. But I do believe that the kids who are young are going to, we're getting more and more diverse. You have biracial kids. That's happening more and more and more and more. There's the melting pot is melting even more. And so I do think things will change, but, but like,
I'm sorry.
No.
Go ahead. I know you don't have a lot of time. You got other guests to get to. My wife tells that to me all the time, that our kids are going to change the world. Not just our kids, but kids like ours.
Yeah.
Cause we do live in a community. I live in Bolingbrook, and believe it or not, there is a vast amount of biracial children in Bolingbrook, be it black, white, black, Hispanic, white, Asian, white. It's a vast majority. I was surprised when we moved there that there are a lot of biracial families there. And, you know, it's not just about being biracial, but you bring up the LGBT community as well. And there seems to be this attack on them that's just unwarranted. You know, it just won't stop. I wanted to ask Roger a question. Still had time.
He had to step away for a second. I think he's getting something ready for the next newscast or something he has to put up online.
Okay, he was a teacher, right? He was a teacher.
Yeah, for many years.
Did he teach history? I couldn't remember what he taught.
He mostly taught like communications and things like that. At least that's what he talks about. He probably taught other things as well, but I know he did a lot with communications and broadcasting.
Okay, because see, I was hoping it was history. I couldn't remember what it was. I know he did. He mentions that he has taught, you know, on many occasions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking back to history. I read somewhere a long time ago that America, at our inception, we're talking going back to like the Mayflower.
okay,
was originally supposed to be a penal colony.
I have never...
I'd be wrong about that.
I've never read that. Now, that could be something that's out there. I don't know about that. And of course, Australia famously was a penal colony.
Right.
I do not... I've never heard that. Roger's ambling back up to the microphone right now. Roger, our caller Patrick was asking if you ever taught history, and if you did you ever hear about... he thought he read once that America was first thought of, like back in Mayflower times, as being a penal colony, that it was going to be set up as a penal colony.
No, never heard that.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
So, Patrick, you know what that is?
Not to say that.
That's fake news, Patrick.
Well, no, I mean, that's not to say.
CNN. CNN's trying to tell you that it was a penal colony.
It might as well have been. I mean, come on. We're screaming about immigration. Not one person here is remembering what's happened to the Native Americans, the Indians in this country.
Yeah, well, they're not going to get their due over the next 3 years. That's for sure. Things are not going to get any better as we strip away public lands and you know, let the oil pipelines go through and things like that. This is not going to be their time to get any retribution or you know, get their due. That's for sure.
But why does it have to always be about retribution?
That was the wrong term. But you know, things aren't going to be
above moving forward, and we're not. Moving, I got to get back to the core of it. We're not moving forward.
We are not.
This president, him and people that think like him and people that are hardcore patting him on the back are really dragging us back to a dark time.
But here's the thing, Patrick. Here's what let's glass half full this before we wrap it up. Maybe go with me here for a second. This is going to be hard to get to. Maybe we need to go through this. Maybe we, during the Barack Obama years, we just put a shiny new coat of paint on a falling apart structure. And now the structure is, we're seeing the cracks, we're seeing everything that's really there underneath that shiny coat of paint that for 8 years was how progressive and how with it we all are. And now we're seeing, wait a minute, there's still a lot going on here. And maybe we need this awakening of this is how a lot of people still feel, so that we have these discussions, so that it gets out and we talk a little more about America and what we truly are and who we truly are. And maybe this is what we need to get over that hump and really start making the progress that we'll hope that our kids are going to be able to make.
Well said. You know what? That's actually a very good way of looking at it. You're right. Sometimes it has to get worse before it gets better. I just hope it doesn't get too
much worse.
Go too far down.
Yeah.
We don't need more cars driving into crowds of people who are peacefully protesting.
Yeah.
We don't need more people screaming, we're right because of the color of our skin. We're entitled because of the color. We just don't need it anymore.
Yeah.
But maybe you're right. Maybe we do have to go through this because we have to really look at what lies underneath before we can cover it all up.
Yeah. All right, Patrick, thank you so much for the call. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate all the conversations we have had here tonight.